Hello, my name is Alex, and this is the Turtle Moves podcast. And, well, this isn't how I actually intended to bring the show back, because I have a review partway completed. But then I saw that the first episode of The Watch had hit, so I thought now was as good a time as ever to put an episode out. After I had someone vividly describe it to me in every detail, of course. I should point out that these are only my first impressions of the episode, based on some bullet points I took whilst watching it. So if you're listening to this in the future, some of my opinions may have changed over time. Okay, before I get into my full-blown list of nitpicks and complaints, because that's mostly what it is, I will give a spoiler-free verdict of what I thought of the show. And overall, it's not great, but, you know, I've watched far worse things made by BBC on a Saturday evening. I'd put it on a par with, you know, it's nothing like as good as Doctor Who, but it's far better than Atlantis. Admittedly, if they intend to show it at any other time of day, it's a far cry from being entertaining, but as Saturday tea time drama kind of stuff, it's fine. Now on to the more spoiler-filled section. Surprisingly enough, with a name like that, it does contain spoilers. Although I am remarkably lacking on plot details here, because, to be blunt, the first episode is kind of lacking in plot. It's an awful lot of setup for the series. Even it made a joke of saying how much exposition there was in the middle. But I will try to vaguely couch my points in when they happened, although when I can remember. I'm also attempting to get this written, recorded, and edited in reasonably short turnaround, so please forgive any mistakes I make, particularly when it comes on not checking on the pronunciation of various actors' names. For the first 30 seconds, I thought I'd maybe been misled by the trailer, because that look of Vimes meeting death in that, well, I think it meant to look like a wasteland, but it's also kind of got an oceany to it, maybe because they didn't want to use the desert after American Gods. It was visually striking. And Wendell Pierce's voice for Death just has that low bass, and it's completely different from anyone I've heard do Discworld's Death before, but it really has a quality to it that just works. And then he chuckles. And I just can't see that incarnation of Death ever laughing about anything, let alone when he is working. Vimes is then given a flashback to the events that led up to his death, starting with when he was first in the Watch as Carter's undercover operative, because Carter is now a revolutionary. And yeah, it just feels like it undermines what made the character stand out. It was the murderous psychopath who'd stab you because it was fun that just made it the character dankerous and interesting, and whereas Ankh-Morpork is inherently unequal, and I don't want any part of me to side with Carter. Then the now Captain John Keel comes out, and then the now Captain Keel comes out of the Watch House, and he's played by Hakeem K. Kazim. And he has such a right feel about him, as impossible as it makes a good adaptation of Night Watch coming from this series. I just thought that he got everything about Keel just perfect. Even if he does have "Please Murder Me Immediately" written all over him. We then fast forward 20 years. We then fast forward 20 years and get to see Captain Sam Vimes, played by Richard Dorner, who I had seen in a few things before, and was one of those people when I saw him on the cast list thought, well, there's a safe pair of hands. Yeah, I was wrong. He plays it as a sort of shambling maniac, but with a sardonic wit turned up to 11. And I guess I just react badly to people doing bad Johnny Depp impressions in Discworld adaptations. It tends to end poorly. I mean, I'm not saying that Pratchett was exclusively highbrow humour at all times, but I think going to the pissing contest with a dog within the first 5 minutes did set the wrong tone for me. As far as casting goes, I do like Sergeant Detritus. He played well, being a sort of mix of both Detritus and Fred Colon at the same time, but I am all for practical effects whenever they can be implemented. However, it looks silly. I don't want it to, because there are other times where it... I think as the episode goes on, you sort of grow accustomed to him and you stop seeing it. But when you first see it, it looks a bit like a school play. It looks like a bloke who's had paper mache, whose mum's made his outfit out of paper mache. Carrick sort of comes off as whiny an awful lot in this episode. I'll get to more of it later, but rather than he's arrested the head of the Thieves Guild because it's right, it just sort of feels like, because it's already his job, why aren't things like they are in the mountains? As well as then having the head thief call for Carrot's immediate execution, which I know it didn't appear till, I think maybe Men-at-Arms, maybe Feet of Clay, but that almost aura of people wanting to be the best they can be if Carrot is nearby. If you were going to take anything from a later book and bring it forward, I would have brought that, because I just love the way that, you know, hardened street gangs will play football together because Carrot is stood there and they don't want to disappoint him. Everyone he tries to arrest wanting him to be executed just doesn't work for me. We then get to a bit that I was probably prejudging the most of any of it, which is Angua being played by Marama Colette. But I'm not great on these things. As far as Angua goes, I don't think you could have gone for someone more miscast. Apart from a few showings of warmth a little later on, none of it seems to feel like the same character. But if you view this less as a Discworld adaptation and more a light-hearted fantasy series with some very familiar names, then a small punk corporal sort of works. And then there's the scene where Vimes and Detritus are summoned to see the patrician. And, well, to start with, Detritus definitely goes full colon at this point. Not only are bits from the book rehashed here, but he tends to act more how you would imagine Fred than even Detritus once he became a sergeant. And a chancellor, as Vetinari, is another one of those actors, had you mentioned it beforehand, I would have assumed would have knocked this role out of the park. But instead, it's this sort of cautious, watered-down performance. It just means you come off thinking the less of both the character and the actor for it. And I was just disappointed that yet another actor who should have done Vetinari brilliantly got added to the list of could have done better. Although I do like that the most important rationale behind the patrician giving someone a job is just that a librarian is kept happy. Not even the fact that it is the one for Unseen You, but just that it's a librarian would be unhappy. We then get what I mentally put down as the showing Carrot the rope scene. And that's when I realised that whilst Angua may have the name and certain traits related to the book character, she's actually playing the part of Nobby in this story. And when viewed through that lens, she's actually doing a really interesting job. Although it is also that scene that leads me to the question of how many people were involved in making this show, and somehow they didn't get how the joke works in the line that if you were going to have crime, then it should be organised crime works. Because when they reword it, they kill the joke. It loses the double meaning. I got what they were going with it, it's just, it's less slick and more cumbersome. I was disheartened to discover that alchemists are now more drug dealers than scientists. I mean, it makes sense, and if it was 100% their own universe, that would be fine. Although it does put a new context onto why the guildhouse keeps exploding. Carrot's fight at the Mended Drum is about a tenth as epic as it should be, and this is when Vimes first sees that Carsa has somehow shown up in the city despite having not aged a day in 20 years, before getting knocked out in the Mended Drum. So here's where we meet Cheery. And personally speaking, if it wasn't for their height, I think Joe Eaton Kent does a fantastic job. Because while it has something almost of a Noel Fielding vibe about it, there's still just a certain optimism and confidence having updated the actual topics around Cheery's character, as it were, to a more modern perspective that I can get behind. Just even after they acknowledge that there are some tall dwarves out there, Cheery towering over everyone in a scene feels wrong. Particularly when it's so much of a plot point that Carrot is dangerous down the mine because he's a human, not a dwarf. Even more so than in the book, if anything. So around here I noticed that the wardrobe went from being a sort of punk sword and sorcery kind of thing going on that worked for what they were doing to a certain degree and just became blue shirts with blue jackets. I mean, I get that they're cop. It feels very round world. It's also here that the electric lights just really started to boil my blood because they were just everywhere. So they just got harder and harder to ignore. I did like how the CCTV camera was done. I just didn't understand how he then got live playback on it without needing to the picture number changing in the corner. But I think that's me being insanely nitpicky. So I actually like the concept of putting goblins in as an oppressed race from the beginning and giving them a place in the world at the bottom. And I can only assume that the massive outfits are for some sort of budgetary reason, and just CGI little goblins would have cost too much. Because, as everyone online pointed out, they look more like how Grogs are described than goblins. And I have to admit, I don't know why, but I did laugh at just the subtitle that said, "I feel oppressed." I suspect I know why, but I'm not on board with them changing Carrot's backstory just to mean that they don't have to go near all the cliched king stuff. Because clearly this whiny, angry Carrot is not destined to be the king of Ankh-Morpork. I'm on the fence regarding Lady Sybil. I love how the actress is carrying herself and has a feel of actually Lady Sybil about her, despite the huge changes to the character anyway. And I would have loved to see her do a more book-accurate version. But I'm not sure in making her more a vigilante who is trying to correct all of Ankh-Morpork's social wrongs as well as look after dragons, it just feels a little far away from where the character is. I know I've been really lacking on mentioning the plot here, because there is a lot of one. So it's around now that Lady Sybil and Vimes are about to go meet with an informant I'm going to get angry about in a second. And after everyone else has exchanged backstories, the following morning they go to actually attempt to investigate a murder in Sator Square. Possibly my biggest nit I picked. I did wonder when Sator Square got to be so rough and made the gates of the university somewhere that just walking near would have been considered suicide, as opposed to, let's say, anywhere in the shades. And now back under that informant that Lady Sybil and Vimes go to go see. She's called Throat. And I really hope that this is just because they wanted to have an informant called Throat, and not for it to be this show's version of Dibbler. Because the show's version of Throat, rather than, you know, flogging sausage in a bun or something similar, instead looks like she belongs to the Beggars Guild and is, of course, trading in wholesale narcotics, and they have a deal going down with the new playing town any second. But while Vimes and Lady Sybil wait for them to show up, there is enough time to cover Vimes' first arrest, which is actually a really nice scene, apart from the cutaway kind of implying that there must have been 10 to 15 years between his failing to arrest Carsa and his actually arresting Detritus. It was also around here that a did start to wonder what they were going to hope to reveal over the course of multiple episodes when both Angua's secret and Detritus' thing he doesn't like to talk about had been then revealed later in the same episode. But hey, they've still got that library book to find. No wait, sorry, they found the library book. And the summoning of dragons is in a lot better nick than usual. It's at this point Carsa shows up and stops them from retrieving the librarian's book. Carsa attempts to shoot Sybil, and Vimes takes the crossbow bolt for her the way Keel did for him at the start of the episode, and we cut back to Death, who lets Vimes know that this isn't the end, to close out the episode. As I said at the beginning of this, despite all my fan-fueled problems with the episode, on the whole, it's alright. That's pretty much all the thoughts I've got on this episode. I don't know if I'll do episode 2 or not. I'll see how the whim strikes me. Please stay tuned for our upcoming relaunch. And remember, the turtle moves.